Life Audio.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Salty Saints Podcast. I'm Zach.
And I'm Randy.
That was a terrible ghost.
I know it. It was really bad. I was trying. I don't know why ghosts are always like tenors or something, but
I don't know that they are. Yours was, that was terrifying.
It was just horribly executed.
Yeah, that was all. Like Tiny Tim snuck in the room and was like whispering from the corner. That was terrifying.
Here I am tiptoeing through the tulips. Yes. So, Zach, what are we talking about today?
Guys, it's spooky season. We're talking about Halloween. And whether that's biblical or not, and what Halloween is,
and just how bad we can imitate ghosts.
Yes, and just how bad we can, well, just how bad Randy can imitate ghosts. But first, we're going to have a quick word from our sponsors.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Okay, so, Randy, do you promise to do no more ghost impersonations?
I will do no more ghost impersonations. I promise, ever again in my entire life.
All right, that's fair. Well, I mean, you don't have to. Like, that's kind of like...
With you.
Okay. That was a lot of skin in the game, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I swear this off forever. Like, it wasn't that bad. It just, you know...
I may still at some point have small grandchildren in the future, and I will definitely attempt to scare them with my spooky ghost voice.
It was spooky, I'll give you that, but I don't know in the ways that you think. All right, y'all, Halloween, that's what we're talking about today. Not just Halloween, we were like, let's do like a catch-all episode of like Halloween, haunted houses, witches,
everything,
and all that, you know?
Magic.
Yeah, because I mean, that's kind of what gets attributed to this time of year, is it's kind of like the mystical time of year. At least that's how like every pagan group saw it, or at least in this hemisphere.
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, we did an episode where we actually talked about things that we were seeing in contemporary culture that really are kind of throwbacks to paganism and the worship of gods and deities. This kind of, but not really, kind of is the reverse of that. Things that are out there that the church might commonly say, oh, that's bad, that's evil. What if you really look at it, it's not so much.
Well, pause. Okay, you got to be careful there, because we could have just lost half the viewership like that. Because they're like, oh, they're saying it's all fine. No, we're not. It's not all fine. But let's take a look at all these things with equal scales. Let's be fair. That's all I'm asking. Let's be biblically fair. And so let's not just go off of our own preconceived notions that all things that have a pumpkin attached to them are of the devil.
Right.
That's all I'm asking we do here.
Right.
Let's give this a fair go. And I think we start with what is Halloween.
Okay, good.
Because, I mean, that's for us here in America, Halloween is the big one.
Right.
Is Halloween big in other countries?
No.
I didn't think so.
Not at all. In fact, so in Colombia... maybe in grand part because it is a Catholic country like most other Latin American countries, and I'm pretty sure most other Latin American countries do this as well. They don't have Halloween. They have Children's Day, the Day of the Children. And the idea of the Day of the Children is that you dress up, not necessarily as something spooky, but you put on a costume, you walk around, and people give you candy.
I mean, in a lot of ways, that's the same thing.
Oh, definitely. And definitely influenced by North American culture, bleeding over into their culture through television advertisements. And hey, guess what? Candy makers in Colombia see a chance to make a buck too. So they say, hey, we need this holiday, but we're not going to call it Halloween. There are other cultures, though, where, like in Mexico, it is full blown. It's the Day of the Dead.
Which is full blown the direction we don't want to go in.
Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think we come back to Day of the Dead.
Okay.
And I actually heard, I don't even know when he made this video. I hope it wasn't just like days ago, but I heard a Mike Winger video on this and I thought he killed it. Thought he nailed it. It was the fairest take on Halloween that I've heard.
Yeah.
And I can just summarize it real quick and we can kind of talk about what he said.
Okay.
And then we can, you know, do our own thing. But basically he said, you know, when you look at the roots of Halloween, it's not good. It isn't good. It starts as paganism from the Gaelics.
Right.
And basically, we'll read through kind of the history of what Halloween is. We'll get to that, or where it came from, you know. But it was like the Christianization of a pagan holiday, basically, that All Hallows Eve, or All Hallows Day, All Saints Day, is the Christianization of a pagan holiday, which would have been Samhain. We'll get around to all that. But we kind of look at Halloween and go, oh, it's evil. And it was, you know, it definitely was. And at its roots, it is. And even still today, there are a lot of groups of people that use it for evil purposes. Satanists doing crazy stuff on Halloween. There are, you know, Wiccan and pagan groups doing crazy rituals and stuff on Halloween. But the way 90% of the United States is viewing Halloween is it's a little kid wearing a sheet with some eye holes cut out of it, or dressed as a doctor, or dressed as a cowboy, or dressed as whatever, going door to door to go get some candy.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's not evil. That's just a kid that wants some candy. Like, that's cute. Like, he's got a stupid little costume on. That's funny. You know? Like, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And so those were kind of the two ways he was looking at it. But then he brought in a third way that I thought was really, really well done. Because I wouldn't have thought this, and I'm glad he brought it up. But that there are a lot of people that come from cultures that do embrace the darker side of Halloween. Like, say somebody came out of Wicca, or somebody came out of a pagan background, or say somebody came from a Mexican culture where the Day of the Dead is huge, where they're literally basically performing necromancy, celebrating necromancy.
Yeah.
And that's condemned biblically. That's wrong. So say somebody from a Mexican background walks away from the Day of the Dead and says, yeah, I'm not going to have any part of that. And then they move to America and then we're having Halloween. That may freak them out. And so it kind of turns into the whole don't eat sacrificed meat in front of somebody that sees it as more than just meat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like don't do something that's going to cause a brother or sister to stumble.
Right.
And Halloween can most certainly be that. Yeah. And so it's kind of like, This is a much grayer issue than I think we make it. We want to outright condemn it, or we want to outright say, oh, that's stupid. There's nothing wrong with it. And I think it is an absolute case by case. How do you celebrate Halloween? And are you careful of what it looks like when you do and who it's in front of?
So it's more about what you bring to it.
Yeah.
Than it is about the day itself.
Well, aren't most things, though?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Christmas is great, but how many people make it all about presents and Santa?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly, yes, yes.
Like, which is also evil.
You know, presents are okay, and Santa Claus is actually a saint.
Right.
But the commercialism.
when you make it all about yes. Santa Claus and presents and you neglect Jesus.
Even drop the name Christmas and exchange it for holidays.
Right. Well, that's the new PC version. Right. But yeah, that's the next step. You're right. But yeah, so that was kind of Winger's view. I really liked it.
Yeah.
I agree with that for it. In a lot of ways.
So are we done?
Yeah, I think that's the episode. Thanks for listening. No, I want to dive in and I want to kind of look at these things.
So what is Halloween?
All right. So what is Halloween? Mm-hmm. Halloween started as the Celtic Gaelic festival of Samhain. You've probably heard it pronounced Samhain. A lot of people will say that, but the word is actually Samhain. It's just spelled like Samhain. And basically, I'll give you the Wikipedia version because I think they do a pretty good job, honestly. It says the early literature says that Samhain was marked by great gatherings and feasts and was when the ancient burial mounds were open, which were seen as portals to the other world. Some of the literature also associates Samhain with bonfires and sacrifices. The festival was not recorded in detail until the early modern era. It was when cattle were brought down from the summer pastures and when livestock were slaughtered. As at Beltane, special bonfires were lit. These were deemed to have protective and cleansing powers, and there were rituals involving them. Like Beltane, Samhain was a liminal or threshold festival when the boundary between this world and the other world thinned, meaning the AOC, or the spirits or fairies, could more easily come into our world. Most scholars see the AOC as remnants of pagan gods.
Okay, what is the AOC? I'm not familiar with that term.
That's it's spirits or fairies.
Okay.
That's what in Samhain they would refer to the spirits or fairies as.
But AOC doesn't stand for something?
AOC.
Oh.
Not Alexandria Octate. What is it?
Alpha Omicron.
No. Well, yeah. But what AOC? That's also Alexandria Cortez, the senator.
Oh.
Okay. Everybody calls her AOC. No, okay. No, it's like AOS word. S-I.
Aus.
Word.
C.
Aus. Aos. Yeah. Aos. Okay. Aus.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but it's spirits or fairies.
And I'd never heard of that before.
I haven't either, but I guess I was kind of familiar with, you know, this is probably where, like, grim fairy tales, a lot of the fairies and stuff started trickling into the stories.
Okay.
It's probably from Celtic background.
Okay.
Because, like they said here, it's the remnants of pagan gods. The gods were no longer gods. They were, like, fairies. Which, sure, that makes sense. They're like these people from another dimension that come through, right?
Okay.
So at Samhain, they were appeasing, let's see here. At Samhain, they were appeased, the fairies or the spirits, with offerings of food and drink to ensure the people and their livestock survived the winter. The souls of dead kin were also thought to revisit their homes seeking hospitality, and a place was set at the table for them during a meal, which is very much like the Day of the Dead, right?
To be honest, I don't know very much about the Day of the Dead.
Day of the Dead, they usually set like – I'm not going to profess to be a expert on this, but they would usually set up like altars, and they would leave little trinkets and food and gifts for their loved ones, and then their loved ones were said to like walk the streets of – you know, Mexico or wherever they're celebrating this, and they would come back by the homes and go to the little altars. And so it's kind of similar in that manner, or it seems to me. And if you're an expert on these things and I just butchered that, send us an email and correct me, please. But the souls of the dead kin were also thought to revisit the home seeking hospitality, and a place was set at the table for them during a meal. Mumming and guising were part of the festival from at least the early modern era. I don't know what that means. Whereby people went door to door in costumes. Reciting verses in exchange for food. The costumes may have been a way of imitating and disguising oneself from the spirits and fairies. Divination was also a big part of the festival and often involved nuts and apples. And the late 19th century, John Rhys and James Fraser suggested it had been the Celtic New Year, but that is disputed. Basically, in the 9th century, the Western Church endorsed the 1st of November as All Saints Day. That's what I was talking about as the Christianization part. This is possibly due to the influence of Alcuin? I don't know. and the 2nd November later became All Souls Day. And so really what you got here is a end of harvest festival.
Okay.
And it's the day where the border between our world and the other world is supposed to be veiled, like the most thinly veiled, so the fairies and stuff can get through. And that's why they open up all the tombs so they can come through. And they're making their basically sacrifices to these deities.
So do you remember the film Fantasia?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a classical music set to cartoons.
Yeah.
And one of the pieces in there, one of the sets is Rimsky-Korsakov, Night on Bald Mountain.
Yeah.
Night on Bald Mountain. Okay.
Yeah.
Night on Bald Mountain is about All Saints Day and Halloween. Yeah. So that's why you get the beginning of it is all this sort of tumultuous, and it's all about the evil spirits running around on All Hallowed Even, Halloween, and then you reach a point in the song where you hear the church bell, dong, and everything becomes calm, and the orchestra plays a very quiet, reverent song at the very end. Well, that's midnight came, and All Saints Day started, and the saints came and drove the demons away. That's what that whole piece is about.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's
so that kind of tells the story of Halloween there.
Yeah. That's wild. Yeah. I forget when this came about, but I'd actually come across that. The reason I said Chernabog, that's the big demon that stands on top of the mountain in the Night on Bald Mountain.
Okay.
And Slavic god of night.
Okay.
And so he's basically the representation of nighttime. He comes out once it gets dark, which makes sense for the picture. But I didn't know if there was a tie there, so I just Googled it, and I was like, what does that have to do with it? But nothing. Okay. It's just a stupid Disney thing.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. At least that's their take on it. And I suspect that that's what Rimsky-Korsakov had in mind.
So on a Spark Notes sort of version here, is Samhain evil?
Sounds like it is.
It's pretty evil.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty evil.
I mean, they're opening up tombs.
Yeah.
And sacrificing animals.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
It's bad.
Interesting.
Don't partake in Samhain. Don't make sacrifices to the fairies, okay? That's bad. Ooh, weird connection here. So I went to Ball State, chirp, chirp. And that was the first time I went to college. Did not go well. But the Ball Brothers that make like Ball mason jars.
Yeah.
That's how Ball State started.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Wow. You're getting a history lesson.
Yeah.
So anyways, they've all got houses over there that they used to live in. And so like there is a bunch of area like dedicated that, you know, that they would have their houses built or whatever. And it's now kind of like almost like museum territory.
Yeah.
But one of the guy's daughters would go out and build like these little, like, I want to say she'd build these little houses and stuff and put them in like the woods around their house because she said the fairies in the woods would talk to her.
Oh my goodness.
And it's like a thing that, I forget what the place is called. Hold on a second. Like a museum sort of around the school, Minnetrista. That's what it is. And every year now, they hold this thing called Fairies, Sprites, and Lights. And they let all of these, like, lanterns off into the air. And they all float up and stuff. And it's like a big thing. But, like, when you step back and you think about that, you're like, well, that's a little weird. Like, that's kind of eerie. Yeah. I don't necessarily that. That seems sketchier than what we're doing on Halloween, dressing up like a little cowboy and going and getting candy. Now, I understand that there is a connection between, like, Samhain with the way it said they would dress as, you know, whatever these disguises and go ask for food.
Right.
But if you've lost the why, right? Like today, a little kid, like, okay, in Samhain, you're dressing up, going to get food so you can go give it to the spirits, right? That's the whole idea. A little kid today is not dressing up asking for candy so they can go give it to some spirit. They're asking for candy so they can go pig out watching cartoons later that night. You know
and
what I mean?
They'll beat the snot out of you if you try to take that candy. I know that from experience.
So I guess what I'm saying here is, like, even if something shares the roots, and this is something I've been wrestling with a lot lately, like God can take something bad and turn it into something fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I'm not saying like that you should. Let me say this. If you as a Christian go, I don't feel comfortable practicing Halloween, that's fine.
Sure.
Good on you.
Yeah.
But this also doesn't seem like the kind of grounds upon which you can condemn somebody for letting their kid dress up as a doctor or a cowboy or whatever and go ask for some candy.
Right.
Because if that's all they're doing, if they're not looking at this and going, yes, we're going and doing this because we're practicing the day of Samhain, you know, like, that's different. That's a bad thing. But to just go get candy, who cares?
So two things here. In the Old Testament, we have, I believe it is five festivals that in the book of Leviticus, they're laid out for the Israelites to follow. The five festivals follow the timing of pagan festivals that were going on at the same time.
Right.
They were intended to substitute for those festivals. That's the one thing. I was teaching on that in Columbia and mentioned this to my students, and they said, oh, we do that too. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, Carnaval. Colombia on the coast has a big history of Carnaval. Carnaval is basically a Mardi Gras, and it's a time when people would just have this massive binge drinking party with all kinds of scantily clad people dancing around.
Fat Tuesday, man.
You better believe it, and very much so. They said what the churches did is they would organize their youth retreats during the week of Carnaval.
Right.
And specifically, their idea was, let's leave. Let's go someplace else. We'll get a camp, and we'll send all of the kids to the camp. And they'll go there and have a great time instead of being at home twiddling their thumbs while their friends are out in Carnaval, and they're thinking, well, maybe it wouldn't be so bad if I went.
Well, right.
That is great. That is exactly what the Old Testament is doing. They substitute one thing for another. The thing that they are substituting for is evil. What
right.
they put in its place is either good or
neutral.
Neutral.
It's just something.
And in this case, sending your kids out dressed up like a bumblebee or
right.
or a ballerina
right.
to get some candy, as long as you monitor how much candy they're eating that night.
Right, yeah. I mean, you could be endorsing the gluttony of your child, which also isn't good. You know,
you like, could be supporting your local dentist.
Yeah. Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, but to a point. Yeah, no, I think you're right. And like, it's the same today, right? We God can take something bad and turn it into something, you know, neutral or even good. And here's the deal. I'm not going to sit here and defend Halloween because I get it.
Right.
If you're the kind of person that's like, no, I don't want this for my family, great. That's your choice. But we need to show grace and understand if somebody else can look at it and go, well, it's just meat to me. It's not meat sacrificed
right.
to a God
right.
to me. And if my kid wants to go get candy, I'm going to let my kid go dress up as a raptor and go get candy. You know what I
right,
mean?
Yeah.
Like, whatever. Cool. I think we divide over this too much. This is one of those things that can cause division among brothers and sisters. And it's like, if your friends are sacrificing goats to Satan on Halloween, you should probably confront them on the issue. Most definitely. If they're just sending their kids to the neighbors to grab some candy, that's a different story. And that's all we're trying to say here.
Yeah. Interesting side note. October 31st is not only Halloween, it's also Reformation Day.
It is Reformation Day.
It is the day when supposedly Martin Luther nailed 95 theses on the door of All Saints Church in Wittenberg. So there's the connection with All Saints Day. It would have been a huge festival for that church. So what better time to nail your 95 theses to the door than the night before everybody comes to church, to the All Saints Church on All Saints Day. So everybody gets a chance to read it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
He was somewhat of a controversial figure, wasn't he? Like, just an interesting guy. Like, fun.
Have you ever seen a kid dressed up like Martin Luther for Halloween?
I can't imagine it would be a great costume. I mean, it'd be a great costume.
Yeah.
It'd be scary.
It'd be strange.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody would get it.
Yeah. Also, like, I don't know that, like, your little kid should be, like, drunk wandering the streets either. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't seem good either.
Yeah.
That's my one dig on Martin Luther, but he's hilarious. I can't help it. So we've covered what was Halloween. What do we do now? Are they the same? No, not for most people. For some people, sure. And that's bad.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we talked about how if somebody comes from a culture where they're really sensitive to this and this bothers them, well, don't talk about it around them, or don't go trick-or-treating with them. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Be sensitive to the needs of your brothers and sisters. Don't cause them to stumble. And that matters, too.
Yeah.
But what about things that happen around Halloween? I got thinking about this. Like haunted houses.
Okay. Yeah.
Because, like, so I don't think most people know this. Do you know where haunted houses started?
I have no clue.
The church.
Really?
Now, hold on. Let me make sure that I'm right on this. It may not be the beginning of haunted houses in their truest form. Like, maybe somebody was doing this, like, hundreds of years ago.
Okay.
I don't know. But, like, in our modern times, from the way I understand it, that it was started by the church and they called them hell houses. And the point was, you would go in and they would scare you into salvation. That was the whole point. You would go in and they'd have like a car crash scene where like there's two
goodness.
Drunk drivers and now they're dead at the wheel. Or like it would be like a, you know, teen pregnancy thing. Or it would be like a, like they would just do all these scenarios to scare you out of them so that you would then accept Jesus. And so that's kind of the beginnings of, like, the modern haunted house kind of got going by the church. Now, is that a great way of evangelization? Probably not.
I was just going to say, I wonder if that worked for him.
I doubt it. I don't know. It was like the, you know, 40s, 50s.
Maybe
it may have.
They did.
You know? But so I guess my thing is, like, people probably don't know this about me. I worked in haunted houses for, like, 10 years.
You told me that you have a certain skill at putting makeup on people to make them look like
well,
zombies.
Well, I'm also a cosmetologist by license, so like I had that under my belt too. So yeah, well, it's really funny. It's the opposite. Now, here's the understand this, folks. I did not choose cosmetology. My parents owned a cosmetology school, and so when I turned 16, they said you can get a job at McDonald's or you can get your license in cosmetology, so you've always got a job to fall back on. And I said that one. And so I did, and honestly it's been great. It's super paid off. I barbered for
years. Zach is good.
But makeup in haunted houses, it was kind of crazy because it's all the rules of like doing beauty makeup, but the opposite. Like in beauty makeup, if you want like your eye drawn to something, you want to paint like you want it to be lighter, right? So if you want like the bone structure to show, the bone structure needs to be a little bit lighter than everybody else. And so like it's kind of the same concepts, but you just go like to the oomph degree in the haunted house because you want them super gaunt. So I'm going to make your cheekbones really white and everything else super dark. So you just look like drained in between, right? And that's like a zombie or whatever. Now, here's the deal. I don't really do all that anymore. And I went to a haunted house a couple years ago because I hadn't been in a long while. Mm-hmm. And I was like, maybe we'll go to a haunted house. And I went through and I just felt icky the whole time. Like, it was so gory and there was language. And like, I just didn't, I don't know, man. I felt kind of gross. And I'm not condemning haunted houses. Once again, I think this is another case-by-case matter. You need to do your research on what haunted house you're going to. And I will tell you, most haunted houses I've been to, as somebody that was in that industry for years, and that was kind of back when my salvation was questionable, I'll say that.
Right.
I don't think I was right with God in those days. And I'm not equating those two things, but they just so happen to be happening at the same time. I think there are family-friendly haunted houses. Okay. They're totally out there, but you got to look for them. And they're like just cutesy little shows. And, you know, you have like a big cartoony Frankenstein walking around or something. Oh, that's kind of funny, you know, versus like dismembered people, which is what you see in most of them. And that's not good. Like, we don't need to subject ourselves to those things. And so I guess what I'm saying is, you know, not all things Halloween are bad. But you need to be careful what you participate in at Halloween as well. Once again, not condemning all haunted houses, but there's a lot of stuff in haunted houses that aren't okay.
Where do you stand on, like, spooky movies?
Oh, that one's so hard because, like, once again, scary movies have a, like, a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
Because it's fun to be scared.
Yeah.
But then there's a line.
Right.
And like, there are movies that people shouldn't watch. And in fact, I'm having a harder and harder time with scary movies in my life because the longer scary movies are around, the further people want to push the boundaries and the darker they want to make them. And like, I guess my thing is like, whenever I pick up a scary movie, I don't know how far it's going to go. And a lot of times when I get to the end of a scary movie, I'm like, that did not benefit me in any way. In fact, I just feel worse about life. Whereas, like, you watch, like, an old scary movie, like, Halloween. Like, the original Michael Myers Halloween. Not these new ones. They're brutal.
Right.
But the original one, there was no blood. It was just, like, it was, the whole concept was, like, to play on your just, like, your emotions, right? And I really, I appreciated that about it. That it like, kind of put the ball in your court and said, just be scared. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it let you kind of visualize.
So, yeah, I have enjoyed movies by people like Alfred Hitchcock. Now, Hitchcock is an older guy.
But it's the same concept.
It's the same concept.
It's what
concept.
You don't see that's scary.
Exactly. That's what scares you. And usually there's a good moral to it. M. Night Shyamalan. I enjoy his movies too.
Yeah.
They're spooky. They're scary. But there's not a lot of gore, and
they,
typically
they started better
than decent
than they are now.
Yeah. Something happened.
Signs was great.
Signs was awesome.
In fact, go back and watch that movie. Twists. Go back and watch that movie from the perspective that it's not aliens, but it's demons. Everything adds up. Everything adds up. It's the water. It's the holy water that keeps them away. Like, everything's weird about it. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm with you. Like,
yeah. Okay.
I think there's horror movies that aren't necessarily all that bad, and there's ones that are terrible that no one should watch.
Right.
In fact, I have a list of movies that I have accidentally stumbled across in my day that I don't tell people about because I don't want them to see them. And like, that's the only way to keep it safe, in my opinion. But yeah, I have a really hard time saying just like broad term scary movies are okay.
Right. Yeah.
It's a movie by movie basis. And I think you need to be careful. And there are ways of doing that. I mean, there are review sites that'll tell you how much gore's in something, how bad's the language, are there sex scenes, whatever. Like, you can find that.
Right.
But that's not just horror movies now. That's everything now. Yeah. You got to be careful of everything you watch on TV. So it's almost like, I don't know, just be careful what you watch in general, you know?
Well, you know, here at our church, we used to put on Polar Express. And we did that for several years in a row. Finally, we started hearing from parents that their children were scared at certain points. And typically they were the younger kids, but some of those scenes are very spooky. So we actually put on a showing where we turned the house lights on. They were dim, but they were at least on, and it took some of that fear away.
Yeah.
So.
Let me say this, too. Like with horror movies, I think that there can even be a good moral found in a lot of horror movies where it's like good triumphs over evil.
Right.
And it's usually a rocky journey to get there. And in a lot of ways, that's not so much different from what we might read in scripture.
Yeah.
The difference is...
Oh my goodness, read the book of Revelation. It reads like a horror movie.
Exactly. And that's kind of my point here is I think visually what we watch versus what we read are two different things.
Yeah.
And I don't totally understand why, but they are. Like, it affects you differently to witness something versus read about something.
I'm sure there's psychological reasons why.
Yeah. And so I would almost like, because like I've always said, if you made the Bible into a movie, it would be rated X and it would be horrible. Like, it's got so much horror. Like, if you had a visual image for everything written in the Bible, you shouldn't watch it. You shouldn't watch that movie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But we can read it and understand, and we can kind of like, but that's because it's in your brain. Your brain's kind of processing this. And so you can kind of filter things the way you need to. Watching it, you're just stuck seeing what you see.
Yeah.
But in a similar way, I guess I prefer if I'm going to like take in something scary, I'd almost rather like read something scary or listen to like somebody tell a scary story.
Yeah.
Generally, I find that that's way less screwed up. That's just my take. But you know, once again, if you're like, hey, no, scary stuff, bad, cool, fine. But also be careful to just blanket statement, look at anybody that's like, you watch scary movies, you're going to hell. It's like, yeah, that seems
that's a
like a lot
top,
too. Yeah. So yeah, it's a lot of these things we're talking about today are going to be gray.
So one of the other things that we talked about coming into this was to spread a little bit beyond Halloween. Talk a little bit about contemporary literature. There are books, there are series that deal with magic in general.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't know how qualified I am to get into each individual story because I haven't broken down. Like, for instance, I mean, what you're talking about here, you're looking at like Lord of the Rings, you're looking at C.S. Lewis, you're looking at Harry Potter, you're looking at things that have like wizards and witchcraft and things in it, right? I don't know that the right way of approaching this is to say, this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad. So I don't even know that we talk about literature so much as recognize that it's out there.
Uh-huh.
But I think we should talk about what does the Bible say about like dark forces or about witchcraft or about sorcery, about those sorts of things, and then let people come to their own conclusions on those issues.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that fair?
That makes great sense.
I think that that's the safer way because I don't know enough about each of those individual movies.
So what does scripture say?
Okay. So biblically, here are the things condemned by scripture, and I think you can find all of the ones I'm going to list right now in Deuteronomy. And so it's in Deuteronomy, but you'll also find these things scattered about elsewhere in different verses. And there's tons and tons of verses talking about these things. But here's what they are. The Bible condemns charmers or the charming of things.
Okay.
Divination or soothsaying.
Okay.
We'll go back through and we'll talk about what each of these are.
Okay, good. Yeah. Excellent.
Seeking mediums and spirits is condemned. Witchcraft is condemned. Interpreting signs is condemned. Sorcerers are condemned. Ones who conjure spells are condemned. Necromancers are condemned. And wizards are condemned. And I think that's all of them. Some of these kind of cross into one another a little bit.
Okay.
Okay.
So let's go define them.
So here's what each of these are. To charm something. Actually, in Hebrew, when you look at the word, it means to, like, literally the definition is to charm or to unite. And so, biblically, when you see that somebody is united, that's going to be the same word as charmed, which is odd, but that's Hebrew.
That's amazing.
There's so few words in Hebrew. They all kind of mean similar things. And so when I look at
charming. So when God says, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and.
It may be that they're charmed.
Join, become one flesh with his wife, then they have become charmed.
Well, that says to become one flesh. I don't know. We'd have to go back and look. One of the ones that I saw was that the people in Israel were standing together and they were, it was the word, the same word.
Okay.
But what I get out of that is. When somebody says they've charmed something, usually it's like they've enchanted something, right? That it has been imbued with a magical property.
Okay.
That's the idea.
Gotcha.
And so it's to unite something to a power.
United with a magical property.
So, yeah. And we'll come back and we'll talk about some examples of these things.
And magic, would that be anything that's contrary to nature, anything that operates in a way that you wouldn't expect it to operate?
We'll have to get to that.
Okay.
Because here's the problem is the Bible's kind of unclear on the issue.
Gotcha.
And so you kind of have to use context clues, and that's what makes it difficult to kind of talk
right.
about some of this.
Okay.
But this is – I think we're going to find that this is a really difficult thing to talk about in ways because it's confusing. And that's why I'm like, we need to hash this out because so many people are like, witchcraft, it's evil. And I'm like, what even is witchcraft in the Bible?
Yeah.
And people generally can't give you that answer. They just tell you what witchcraft is today.
Right.
And it's like, well, wait, yeah, but are
right.
they the same thing? Like,
right.
And that's what I'm trying to get to the bottom
yeah.
of. So that's to charm, divination or soothsaying. That's seeking input from a god through signs.
A god or a spirit, a demon.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Right. From something, right? That you are asking something else to give you input.
But you know that it is not God, God the Father.
That seems to be the way it is conveyed in the book of Deuteronomy.
Okay. Because they go to God all the time.
And that's my point. And we're going to see that about most of these.
Okay.
Is like most of these things that are condemned. Christians do throughout the Bible.
But they do it with
God. But they do it with God and not some other
gotcha.
Thing. And so I'm sitting here going, well, wait, is it about the doing that or is it about who you go to for that?
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
okay.
Very much so.
So you've got if you want to just knock them out as we go down, we can talk about the examples of where they're done poorly and where they're done well.
Okay.
Charming. What's a bad time when something's charmed for the worse? Is anything ever cursed biblically? Like in a bad way?
I'm sure.
Regardless, there are examples I can think of good people doing this.
Right.
Is it Paul that when the rags touch him, that then when they go out and they touch other people,
yeah,
now
yeah.
the people are healed?
Now those people are healed.
Moses' staff
yeah.
is charmed with
right.
the power of God.
Right.
Right?
The prophet, he's at a distance. From he hears that the son of the Shulamite woman has died, and he gives his butler, his aide, his staff, and he says, "You can run a lot faster than I can. Run ahead and lay the staff on the child."
Right. And so that's power from God. Right?
But it's a charm.
But it's good because it's from God. But charm, I guess the take that I get on this, and hopefully the listener can like look through each of these and kind of see where I'm coming from on this. But it seems like magic or like witchcraft or something is when we are seeking power for our own gain.
Gotcha.
Or our own power or our own ability. And we ask that from like these extra dimensional forces, from these spirits, from these gods, from the little g gods, not
right, right.
big
yeah.
big g god demons, whatever you want to call them, or I think it can also be people claiming that they have power when they really don't.
Okay.
Claiming I have this magical power when really they're just lying to people
right.
and fooling them, but it's always with like this selfish twist. Versus God gives people power biblically to do good things with his power, to his glory, not our glory.
Right.
Right? And those people always recognize, well, I'm doing this
but
for
it's
God.
Not me.
And it's not
yeah.
me. It's from God.
Right.
But he's given me this responsibility.
Oh, Daniel. Right? When the king comes to Daniel and says, interpret this dream, and Daniel says, I can't.
And that's the
divination. But my God can't.
That's divination, right? Like he's looking.
It is.
Well,
yeah.
He's looking at the dream. It's also interpreting signs that he's taking the dream and he's saying, I can't do this, but my God can. And so he takes it to God and he interprets it. Wow. But there's also times where it says, and Daniel interpreted the dream. So yeah. Is it Daniel or is it God? Well, it's God, but he's doing it through Daniel.
Right.
Right? But it's not for Daniel's purposes, and okay. It's not for Daniel's gain. It's because he knows the glory of God, and he knows the glory of the one true God.
I love it.
Don't seek mediums and spirits. This is, you know, those who connect the living to spirits. That's what a medium is.
Okay.
That if you go to a medium and you say, I want to contact my dead son or my dead daughter, then they will supposedly put you in contact with the spirit of your daughter or son. Now, biblically, we are told that when we seek the dead, we're not really communing with the dead. We're communicating with these demons or spirits, right?
Yeah.
Ouija boards would be seeking spirits. The board is the medium.
Yeah.
You are using the board as a medium between you and a spirit, right? I can't necessarily think of any times this happens biblically in an okay fashion.
No, I was just trying to think of that too. This might be one that it's just flat out a no-no.
Right. And the one time I can think that it does work is when Saul goes to the witch of Endor and wants to contact Samuel.
Right.
And Samuel, it says that the witch saw a god come up out of the ground.
Right. She was terrified.
Yeah. Now, we've talked about this before, that the word God just means spirit.
Right.
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 And so Samuel comes up out of the ground and immediately starts condemning Saul because he is not supposed to be trying to contact the dead. And so it's like it works. God allows the spirit of Samuel to speak to Saul to condemn him for reaching.
To continue doing the things that he did when he was alive.
Right. And so it's like the one case in which it kind of works, it's like,
It doesn't go well for Saul.
Yeah. Why are you doing this?
He
dies a chapter later. And it says he died because he did not seek the ways of the Lord. He consulted mediums.
Oh, wow.
I forget where that verse is. Look it up. But it actually says Saul died because it goes on to mention that account.
That is incredible.
Witchcraft. This one's really tough. Because I dug and I dug and I dug and I could not find an explanation of what witchcraft is. But when you read it in the context, it seems to be just maybe a blanket term for tapping into demonic power.
Okay.
Okay? That's never good. That's never okay. Right? But on the flip side, and I'll kind of put this in as well, that ones who conjure spells, that's another... that's another category that's condemned. I think you have to equate spells to tapping into demonic power.
Okay.
Right? It's doing something outside of the natural. It's a supernatural act.
Now, did you tell me at one point that the Greek word for witchcraft is like pharmacopoeia?
So that is used at some point, but it's not every time.
Okay.
There are times when witchcraft gets equated to pharmacopoeia, which is the use of drugs for hallucinogenic effects.
Okay.
So basically, if you're tripping on mushrooms, to some degree, that's
not a
witchcraft.
Good thing.
Yeah, so that is condemnable.
Ayahuasca,
yeah, that's bad. Yeah, that's bad. DMT, whatever. Yeah, that's not good. I think you could equate that biblically to witchcraft. But this one's kind of difficult, again, because while witchcraft is tapping into this power from something that isn't God, once again, we see a friend of mine just sent me a podcast yesterday about how Moses was a wizard. And it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek little title.
Yeah.
But they were laughing. They were like, well, what happens in the court in Egypt, in Pharaoh's court, is a wizard's duel between Moses and the sorcerers. And the sorcerers are tapping into power from something demonic, while God has granted Moses the ability to perform these supernatural acts. And we can try and get away from the fact that Moses had anything to do with it. Oh, well, it was just God doing it. Well, yeah, it was God doing it through Moses, right? So what was Moses doing? Well, he was a conduit of God's power to perform something supernatural. I'm not going to call it wizardry. I'm not going to call it witchcraft. It's not, because it's from God. But witchcraft is when you try to do that from anything other than God. And I think the other thing is I don't think we should like beg God to like give us power either.
Yeah.
I don't think that's good either.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a difference in asking God for like, make me powerful versus, Lord, please heal this person.
Right,
Lord, please
right.
give them a sign that they need to know you. Lord, please. And if he chooses to do that through you in some miraculous way, then that's great. But I think that's different than you performing a religious rite so you then have magical power.
So this thing with Moses, you kind of get the same thing with Elijah. Elijah and the prophets of Baal
yes,
and Mount Carmel.
Yep. Yep. And he's making fun of them. I mean, it's like another little wizard.
It's a flat-out
right?
challenge, yeah. It's
well,
a duel.
Because here's the deal. Even if it's – you can say, okay, well, it's not Elijah performing any kind of thing. He doesn't really do anything.
Right.
But he sure sets the stage. And how's that different than a witch setting up a ritual?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, it's the exact same thing. It's I'm going to set the stage and say, now you act. Because that's what a witch does with a demon. They make – things exactly how they need to be. They set up their little magical rite the way it needs to be set, and then they wait for the demon or spirit or whatever god they assume they're speaking to act. So how's that different than Elijah saying, okay, you go do this and I'm gonna go do this, and my god's gonna act, and your god is a phony and he's not gonna do anything? It's different because it's glorifying the Lord God. It's not
right.
A personal glorification.
Right.
And you're not communing with demons. You're not communing with. Now, here's the deal. I'm not saying you should go out and do these things.
Right.
But we can't condemn what Elijah did. It was good.
Oh, yeah.
So what do you do with that is my question. I'm saying this is grayer than we make it. There is something more to this. When things are done to the glory of God, they're good. That's not witchcraft. That's not magic. That's not
right.
Because
yes.
you're not confessing to do it.
Right.
God is. Earlier, we were talking about divination and seeking input from God.
Yeah.
David, when he's in Keilah, because the city of Keilah, because he's running from Saul, he goes to God and he says, are they going to hand me over to Saul? And God says, yep. How is that different? He went to God to right. explain to him what was going to happen.
In
and
fact,
God
part
answered.
Of the book, I think a whole chapter of the book of Leviticus is how to go about asking divination from God.
Yeah. Right.
Using the ephods, you're using the Urim and the Thummim, the two six-sided die.
Right. And so you've got that happening while simultaneously being told, don't do divination.
Right.
How do you make sense of that other than it's who you divine?
Right.
It's who you're going to for the divination. Are you going to God or are you trusting in some spirit that is not God?
Yeah.
And that's the difference. You come down here to sorcerers. Sorcerers seem to be those who claim magical power, whether they have it or not. But even if they do have it, it's not coming from God. It's coming from some demonic entity.
Right.
But do you know who's referred to as a sorcerer? Jesus.
Yeah.
When we look at the extra biblical accounts of Jesus's legitimacy, there are accounts that talk about the sorcerer from Israel,
right?
Joshua son of
Joseph.
Yeah, which is Jesus.
Yeah,
saying that he is a sorcerer. So my point is, Jesus was perceived by the people of his time as a sorcerer for performing the miracles that he performed.
Interesting,
but they were of God.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
The Pharisees look at Jesus and say, you performed that from the devil.
That's right. The power of Beelzebub.
Right. But Jesus gets mad and says, no, I did this by the power of God. And you should know that by seeing what I've done, you know? And so like clearly there's an element of it that's similar, but it's different because it's of God and not these demonic entities. You go to necromancers, those who call up the dead. Jesus calls up the dead. Jesus calls up Lazarus and raises him from the dead. Paul lays on the body of the boy that falls out of the window and raises him from the dead.
Yep, yep.
And that power doesn't come from Paul, and it doesn't come from Jesus. Jesus asks God to do it, and Paul puts his faith in God, and God does it. But how is that? They are raising a person to life from the dead through the power of God, not through necromantic demonic powers. And then wizards, those who have a familiar spirit. A familiar spirit being they have the spirit of a demon attached to them, an unclean spirit, a fallen son of God attached to them, right? And that's how they do the things they do. Well, we have the Holy Spirit. Are we all wizards? Because we have the spirit of God. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's a difference and there's a likeness. And so what I'm saying is, when you go to anybody but God for supernatural intervention,
that's bad.
When you go to God and say, Lord, please intervene, we never say that's bad.
Yeah.
That's always good. But in a lot of ways, that meets the biblical explanation of witchcraft, except for we go to God while they go to the devil.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild?
That kind of makes sense. So it's not so much the thing itself, it's what you bring to it.
It's what you want from it.
What you want from it.
And it's who you go to for it.
Right, right. There's a little short story in the book of Acts. Paul and Barnabas, I think, are on the Isle of Cyprus. Or Crete. They're on the Isle of Crete. And there.
Have you ever attempted to read the entire Bible? Did you do it, or did you only make it part way? I'm John Stonge, and I host a podcast that will make it possible for you to make it through the entire Bible, one chapter at a time. I've been hosting the Chapter a Day Audio Bible Podcast since 2015, and every single day of the week, I read one chapter of Scripture, then follow that up with a time of prayer. And if you're looking for daily insights and inspiration directly from God's Word, I hope you'll give the Chapter a Day Audio Bible a listen. You can find it at lifeaudio.com or on your favorite podcasting app.